This is Central Time. I'm Rob Ferret.
And I'm Veronica Rickert.
After seven seasons, the hit TV show Mad Men comes to an end this weekend, and with the series finale airing on Sunday on AMC. The show follows main character and pitchman extraordinaire Don Draper as he drifts through the turbulent years of the 1960s, a time of radical change in our country's history.
Our next guest says we can actually learn a thing or two about American politics from the show, and by taking a closer look at the show's narratives from the 1960s, we can make connections to today's politics. And culture.
Joining us now is Lily Gorin. She's a professor of political science and global studies at Carroll University and the co-editor of the new book, Mad Men and Politics, Nostalgia and the Remaking of Modern America. Lily, welcome back to Central Time.
Thanks again for having me today.
So a lot of people like the show, Mad Men, a lot of different reasons, the drama, maybe the fashion, the booze. You say it also functions as a political text in a way. Why is that?
Well, it is a piece of iconic sort of imagery and narrative that fits into our understanding in lots of ways with regard to sort of the American dream in some capacity, as well as fitting into our understanding of some of the shifts that were going on in the 1960s. And those shifts and changes and to some degree perhaps even revolutions, the remnants of those are still with us today. A lot of the 1960s shaped certainly the culture debates that we have these days, as well as a lot of the shifts that were economic at the time, and the growth of consumer culture that the advertising world was a big part of, sort of projecting post-war Americana in general, the United States on the international stage. All of these things were going on and shifting and altering during the 1960s, and we have various windows into that through this television creation that was made, you know, in the current time, but is looking back and examining some of those shifts as they were going on.
Well, I want to hear Don Draper now. Here he is telling us how he'll advertise slide projectors.
And Teddy told me the most important idea in advertising is new. It creates an itch. You simply put your product in there as a kind of calamine lotion. But he also talked about a deeper bond with the product. Nostalgia.
And nostalgia is the starting point of the book for you, Lily, and it's complicated. There's this nostalgia for the good old days, a simpler time of the early 60s, before things went crazy in the United States. But as the show tells us, as we know from our history, things weren't so simple. Can you talk about how the show tries to untangle that nostalgia?
Yeah, and I think that's one of the interesting points with regard to the show. Of course, you know, there's a nostalgia for the sort of white picket fence, leave it to beaver kind of Americana of the late 1950s, early 1960s, when, you know, essentially most women were wives and homemakers, although there are quite a few women in the workforce, but they weren't, you know, sort of seen in a lot of ways. And then you have also a sort of nostalgia for the activism of the 1960s, the changes that came about from the civil rights movement and the women's movement and the sexual revolution and Stonewall. And so both on the left in the United States and on the right, there's this sort of interesting nostalgia for the glory days of one part of the 1960s or another. And that sort of nostalgia is still with us because it's still shaping sort of the way we think of who we are as Americans, and you know, how the United States is as a country. And we're still in some of those battles today.
And with that reality and substance on one side and invention and style on the other, I mean, you're telling a story about what America is thinking about itself versus what it really is. And in your contribution to this collection, you talk about Don Draper representing that, who he pretends to be, who he really is, if he really is anything.
Sure. I mean, I think that the sort of Don Draper, Dick Whitman construction, again, fits really interestingly into the long history of American, quote, literary heroes. Most predominantly, he looks and seems like Jay Gatsby from Fitzgerald's famous book. But he also you know, fits into some of the earlier writers. Herman Melville has this great and complicated novel called The Confidence Man. And then, of course, Edgar Allan Poe has a short story called The Diddler, which are about grifters and con men. But there are also some of the versions of them, these grifters and con men, also take the form of sort of godlike creatures. And so it's a question of somebody who's also pitching and selling, which is exactly what Don Draper has done during his professional career, and what he's selling and to whom he's selling. And his great success as a man in advertising is that he kind of understands how to sell things to people at the time and in ways that will persuade them to buy products. And so he's potentially a grifter or a con man on a really substantial scale, and made him a millionaire as well.
Talking to Lily Gorin about the new book she co-edited and contributed to. It's called Mad Men and Politics, about what the long-running, just about to end TV show can tell us about American politics and society. Let's get into the advertising industry a little, Lily. The whole show is set around people selling advertising. What do you make of that as far as what it tells us about the future of advertising, the present of marketing and advertising in the United States?
Well, you know, that was the 1960s was really when advertising started to take off as an entire industry. And there were developments in terms of, you know, what Madison Avenue became known for as an advertising Mecca. And it was also this point where there were Americans with more disposable income as a result of the post-war boom years, as well as America growing up and entering into the sort of the Cold War and developing a substantial military presence globally. And so military corporations were also looking at ways to sort of craft their messages. You had the booms that were going on in the West, particularly California, and we see that integrated into the television show as well. And so what you have during this period is a sort of growth of consumer culture that we live in today, and the professionalization of the way that advertising was used to sell things to all sectors of society. Most particularly in the show, of course, you see the division between advertising that was pitched to men, the businessman who's the traveler, and so they're pitching hotels and airlines and credit cards to men, and then to women, which were essentially home appliances and beauty care and so forth. And so you see the differences in the pitches that are being made by the folks at Sterling Cooper and some of the other advertising agencies to different sectors in the economy. You even have a discussion early on with regard to pitching Admiral television set to the African-American community. And you can see sort of the growth of the way that advertising now, you know, is pitched to young people or senior citizens, men and women, urban dwellers versus rural dwellers and so forth. And that's all coming together during the 1960s as well.
Now, from the perspective of a viewer of today, it can be easy to look back at the how the show portrays sort of a casual, implicit racism, sexism, anti-Semitism, you know, and then there's the women drinking and smoking while pregnant, and just a feeling, hey, good thing we're past all of that. We're so much better now. Is it more complicated than that, though?
I think it is more complicated than that, and I think that's part of the you know, sort of the point that the show is making, is that we do look at that and say, yeah, hey, we don't smoke like that. We don't drink like that while we're pregnant. And, you know, our children don't put plastic bags over their heads, or at least we hope that they don't. And they're all strapped in their car seats in the back seat. And so that we live these much safer lives. But the sort of points that some of the show is making with regard to the experiences of women in the workforce, the experiences of African Americans in the workforce, the experiences of Jews and gay individuals in the workforce are different in certain sense now than they were then, but some of the difficulties that they face with regard to sexual harassment, with regard to racism in the workplace and so forth, some of those things are still with us, and the show is highlighting sort of a more egregious form of it, but some of it is, unfortunately, as people have said to me, yeah, I experienced that last week in my place of employment. The Secretary Day flower arrangement that was given to a friend of mine who's a law firm partner, just like Peggy received them, and she's not a secretary either.
So the quote the creator of the show saying, this is a science fiction show, but it's set in the past instead of the future. And a lot of times science fiction takes a fictional futuristic setting, not to talk about the future, but as a window into the present day when it's created. How much does Mad Men tell us about where we are now during the run of the show in real time?
Well, I think, you know, I think that there are aspects of sort of the current political dynamics that are being integrated into the show, and they're explored in ways that, you know, again, it's speculative fiction. That's what science fiction is. It speculates on, you know, what might a different version of this experience be like. And so I think that particularly with regard to the role of the women as they're coming into careers, most particularly Peggy Olson and Joan Holloway, that they are sort of these examples of women who are trying to figure out how to negotiate in what was then a man's world. Our world is not as much of a, quote, man's world as it was, but it's still often difficult for women and, you know, people of color and, you know, different sexual orientation to negotiate some of these paths as they enter the workforce and they don't know what the norms are, what's expected in terms of the way they conduct themselves based on differences from the majority population with whom they're working.
As we wrap up, Lily, are you planning on a viewing party for the last episode?
I'm planning on watching it without tweeting through the first round and then perhaps watching it again and then tweeting after that.
Rewatching and then yeah. Retweet and spoilers, let them fall where they may.
Exactly.
Thank you so much for joining us today.
Thanks for having me on. It's great.
That was Lily Gorin. She's a professor of political science and global studies at Carroll University. She's co-editor of the new book we've been talking about. It's called Mad Men and Politics.
I'm Veronica Rickard.
And I'm Rob Farah. This is Central Time here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio.